Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, filling in today for Diane. She's on vacation. Some of the nation's largest banks posted billions in profits last week. Obama administration officials see this as a positive indication for the economy. But the federal aid that helped stabilize the banking industry has not yet sparked new lending, and unemployment is projected to top 10% by the end of the year. Joining me to talk about prospects for recovery are Lawrence Michel. He's at the Economic Policy Institute. David Wessel, familiar voice here on public radio of the Wall Street Journal, and Philip Swagel of the Georgetown University McDonough School of Business, and he's a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Thank you.
You can join us as well. 1-800-433-8850 is our number. As always, drshow@wamu.org, our email address. David, let's start with these staggering figures last week. Four major banks together showing quarterly profits of $13.6 billion. J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup. And just a few months ago, these banks were getting federal money. What happened?
Well, a couple of things happened. One is that we pulled back from the abyss of falling into another Great Depression. And so to some extent, the investment in the banks worked. These banks are not crawling to the government for more money. Some of them are making money. But I think you really have to distinguish. J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman were strong banks before. They're even stronger now, taking advantage of the weakness of their competitors. They've paid back some of the money that the government gave them, although they definitely benefited. If you're in the financial business and the financial system is saved from collapse, you benefit. Mm-hmm. They issued billions of bonds that were guaranteed by the government. But Citibank and Bank of America, GE Capital, CIT, this business finance house, they're all still very much struggling. Bank of America and Citi managed to make a lot of money on one-time-only kind of gains. And I think finally what's kind of disturbing is that they're not making money the old-fashioned way by making loans and getting paid back. In fact, if you look at the innards of their earnings releases, you see that they're predicting continued worse losses in consumer loans, business loans, commercial real estate, because, as you point out, the economy is still very sick.
Now, I want to get to that point, but Philip Swagel, have the taxpayers gotten anything back for all the money they pumped into the system?
Yes, I would say we have. I'd first agree with David that the best thing we've gotten is a stable economy. That's first and foremost. But we've also gotten repayments from these firms, right? These were not gifts to the financial industry. They were loans, and they've paid interest. The Treasury Department website says we as taxpayers have received about $6 billion so far. That'd be with a billion. And there are warrants that are being repaid that are worth about 15% of the amount of the loan. So we're going to make a profit on many of these
loans. We, meaning the taxpayers.
We, the taxpayers, are going to make a profit. Now, obviously, that doesn't make up for having to bail out the financial sector to stabilize it. But, you know, given what was happening last fall, that's what we felt that we had to do.
One of the issues, Larry Michel, is Goldman Sachs in particular, but others, now seem set to pay enormous bonuses. They've set aside, I think, $11 billion for that. Are we going to see another round of recrimination as these banks pay enormous bonuses and payouts to their executives after having received public money?
Yeah, I think there's a few things disturbing about the great profits at J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs. We got into this mess with the banks, had to bail them out because supposedly they were all too big to fail. Now we have a duopoly. These two are now really, really strong, and they're way too big to fail now, and we still have financial reform ahead of us. Yes, and I'm a little bit surprised that they are going to go for these huge bonuses. I think this only sets up that they're going to take undue risk. I think it further jeopardizes the financial system. It distorts income inequality and makes people angry. So the whole banking system, which put a gun to the head of the American taxpayer, within the last year, saying, give us money, bail us out, or we'll crash, you know, now is feeling like it can do whatever it wants.
Expand on your point about how this bonus system rewards risk and can be built into a system of incentives that are maybe not very healthy for the economy as a whole.
Well, if you take risks so as to have the option of making a lot of profit and you make a lot of salary when you make profit, you would do it, especially if you don't have to suffer when there's a downside. If the taxpayers cover you on the downside, there's every reason why you would want to just take a lot of risk at the chance of making really large bonuses. And that's part of what we've seen. And it's a way that went free markets, you know, unregulated, really jeopardize the economy and taxpayers.
Now, David, I want you to expand on your point about the fragility of this, that on the surface, these numbers look great. But you look inside the balance sheets, even of these strong banks, there are rise in credit card defaults. Home foreclosures are continued to rise. These so-called toxic assets are still on their books. So what should we know about a full picture here and not just the profit numbers?
I thought it was interesting that the CEO of Citigroup said that he thinks that the rate of loss in consumer loans is beginning to moderate. That was as close as he could come to optimism.
To the good news. Yeah.
Right. We know that with 10% unemployment, with lots of companies unable to manage to make money, with commercial real estate especially being in big trouble, that a lot of banks are going to have to suck it up and take losses. And all of the banks in their earnings thing said that they expect to take more losses. And that's only if the economy does as badly as they predict. The risk is that something else goes wrong, whether it's oil prices or another financial firm that we haven't thought about collapsing, or some sudden loss of confidence that maybe President Obama doesn't have the magic formula for getting the economy going, or Congress starts to create a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen to taxes, and we get something that pushes us back down under the surface just as we are beginning to get the economy's just barely beginning to get its nose up above. So that's bad for the banks, but it's even worse for the rest of us.
Now, you talk about the rest of us, Phil Swagel, the number that our listeners are focused on more than the profits of the banks is unemployment. I mean, this is the number that matters to every American family. It's at 9.5%, headed toward 10%. The Obama administration hoped to keep it at 8%. Clearly, as Joe Biden admitted, they underestimated the problem. Why is the unemployment number so intractable, even while there's still signs of good news in the rest of the economy?
Yeah, it's very difficult just because the labor market is always the last part of the economy to recover. That sometime in September and October, firms and consumers, every American family looked around and said, well, we don't know what's happening. What's happening in credit markets matters to us, and we're stopping to spend. And the uncertainty created by that resulted in the plunge that we saw at the end of the year and the beginning of this year. It's just going to take a long time before firms have the confidence to start hiring again and consumers have the confidence to really start spending and taking risk. And that's why even after the economy has recovered or started to recover, we're going to see unemployment maybe staying at or above 10% for a time to come.
Larry?
Well, I think it's not so much that unemployment is a lagging indicator, as people say it is, but the fact is that we were thrown into a terrible trajectory downwards last year and early this year. And Vice President Biden said they misread the economy. I mean, it was all the consensus economists got it so wrong. If you look at what people were saying was going to happen in the last 3 months of last year and the first 3 months of this year, they said the economy would decline around 2%. It actually declined around 6%. They said that unemployment was going to get up to on average 7.1%. By March, it was already at 8.5%. And I think that's very important to think about, especially as one evaluates the Obama administration plan, which I hope we can come back to because, you know, even before their plan could go into effect, unemployment and job loss was far more severe than even the worst forecast and the blue chip consensus could have predicted.
And isn't it also true that even at 9.5, it's not the whole story because there are a lot of people who are underemployed, who are taking furloughs, whose wages have stagnated, so that actually the damage is even greater than that number indicates.
That's a really good point, Steve. When we get to 10% unemployment, we are going to have around 18 to 19% of the people are going to be unemployed or underemployed at some point, working part-time, wanting a full-time job.
Losing their health benefits.
Well, then that doesn't count the people who are employed or taking furloughs, not having their pension plans contributed to.
Right, right.
Wages have imploded. In the last 6 months, wages are growing around one-third the pace they did over last year and the year before. And a lot of people are taking absolute wage cuts. So there is a tremendous pain out there, which calls for, what are we going to do about it now?
And There has to be political implications here, David. I mean, you look at the latest polls out this morning, ABC, Washington Post, confidence in Obama's policies to improve the economy went from 72% 6 months ago to 56% today. That's a significant decline in confidence. And what's the political ramifications?
Well, I think people want results. You know, mm-hmm. you might have, if you have a great plan and all you can say is it would have been worse had I not implemented this plan, that's not very convincing. And I'm certain that...
And it's hard to demonstrate to people,
absolutely.
You know, the absence
absolutely.
Of...
There is,
it's
I mean...
True.
There is definitely something unusual happening here that... The GDP numbers, the economic growth is horrible, and the job market is even worse than you would have anticipated given that thing. So I think particularly looking ahead to the November 2010 elections, the Democrats and the president must be wondering, wow, if we have to go to the polls with 10% unemployment, let's hope the Republicans don't have a strong message, a strategy, because if they ever get one, we're toast. So I think there's a lot of political pressure, and there's this very awkward thing. You can see it in the members of Congress. Some of them would like to do another stimulus bill, to do something, even though this one hasn't completely worked its way through the system. But they know that they're constrained somewhat by all this anxiety about the deficit. And so you have this tension between maybe we should do more now, but maybe if we do too much now, that the bond market will freak out, drive up interest rates, and we'll look like we're becoming the world's largest subprime creditor. So there's quite a tension there.
And Phil Swagel, quickly, the polls also showed that of all the issues, the one that the public is most negative about in terms of the Obama performance is the deficit, down to only 43%.
That's right. And the deficit is bad today, but I think we can understand that, right? The administration inherited a difficult economy, and it's getting worse. They look ahead, though, and healthcare is really going to be a problem.
We'll get to that. Yeah. You hold that thought. We'll get to that as soon as we come back. More conversations about the economy. So stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our topic this hour is the profits made last week by some major Wall Street banks and the larger outlook for the economy. And with me to talk about it, Larry Mischel is at the Economic Policy Institute, David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal, Phil Swagel teaches at Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, and he's a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. And we were starting, Phil, to talk about this question of the possibility of a second stimulus package, given the fact that the unemployment numbers continue to rise, even in the face of $787 billion. And Bob Samuelson in the Washington Post this morning had a column saying part of the reason why the stimulus has not been very effective is the money was squandered, in his words, that this package was crafted for political reasons as much as economic reasons. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think Bob Samuelson is right in many regards. I would have had the money go differently. I would have had personal tax cuts that people would receive very quickly, and some people would spend it. And then probably money to state and local governments who now are facing very large cutbacks. So I think the package was poorly designed. Where I would fault the administration is really not getting as involved as they should have. They really left it to Congress. It seemed like, from my perspective, and that was one of the defects. They have a chance to correct it now with health care, with their energy and climate package. it'd be nice for the administration to get more involved at the beginning in crafting better packages.
To add to your point, reports out of the Governors Association this morning, a lot of complaints about unfunded mandates and the possibility of increased spending for Medicaid without the money to pay for it.
That's right. Their health care plan, as far as I can see it, is that we're going to spend more on health care, and somehow this will let us spend less on health care. And this, it just doesn't add up. It's like they have an imaginary friend that's going to let them cut costs that no one else can see, and hopefully they'll show it to us. We know costs are going up. Someone is going to pay. So it's either going to be businesses, ultimately consumers, or the states and the governors are going to have to pay. And if,
or the health industry.
The health industry is not like the health industry has had soaring profits over years. They obviously they make money, but it's not like their profits have been going up and up and up. There's a source to tap.
Larry, let me ask you about the possibility of a second stimulus package. This is columnists like Paul Krugman in the New York Times, very strong advocating this. But there is, as David said, the question of adding to a deficit, which already is projected at $1.8 trillion. What do you think the prospects are?
Well, that's a question for the politicians, what the prospects are. I think there's a great need. But I think we first have to get right how to think about what is actually the second stimulus in this recession. The first one was in the administration that Phil served in, and it was all tax cuts. And we know that it didn't work all that well. A lot of that money got saved. There actually was a bunch of tax cuts in the President Obama's recovery package. There's already $43 billion of tax cuts for individuals have hit the street. And in this environment, people are saving it and not spending it as much. So all these people who are saying that it was not well done because it didn't have tax cuts, I'm just not sure what's going on. And Robert Samuelson needs to go study a lot more to say that this was misdesigned. I don't think he understands the basic economics that if you spend money by the government, you're raising demand, it'll create jobs. It's going to take a while to do. But, who's to say that right now we could have expected far different?
But isn't it true that a lot of the spend out was done for political reasons, not purely economic reasons? The metric of let's get the most bang for the buck was not really what governed a lot of the stimulus package.
I think that's absolutely incorrect. That's incorrect. It was designed to occur over basically 2 years. There were a number of different components. Some of it is social supports like unemployment insurance, food stamps that are going to get out quickly to help those who are hurt, who are then going to spend the money. There's a longer-term investment agenda that's going to go on for several years. As you said, we're going to have high unemployment for several years. So the idea that somehow money being spent at the end of 2010 is wasted is, to me, a very, very silly idea. So I don't think it was dictated by politics. It's sure there's all sorts of things are dictated in the particulars by politics. But this was a huge, much huger recovery package than anyone would have expected in November or December. I think it was hugely important. The real problem is, given how big it was and the fact that we're still going to have high unemployment really means how deep a hole we are in.
I think obviously there was politics here, but so are we surprised? I mean,
no.
And especially since the president wanted to get something through quickly. I think the political problem he has is that it looks like he just gave the keys to the Treasury to the Congress. And whether it's true or not, that's what people think, and it makes it hard to do a second or third stimulus, depending on how you do the counting. He also had a kind of ambitious approach to this. He said, we want to spend a lot of money short-term to get the economy up. That's the conventional form of stimulus. But while we're spending all this money, I want to lay some, he calls it a foundation for things in the future. And that's that long spending stuff, some of it's education, infrastructure,
right,
and stuff like that. And that's, it may actually be a good thing, maybe better than having people standing on their brooms on street corners, but it's hard to explain to people how that helps the economy.
And it
right
doesn't
now
have the same short-term impact. It's a long-term investment.
Right. But on the other hand, unfortunately for us, it turns out we don't have a short-term recession. So I think Larry's right. Maybe by accident they ended on something that's kind of the slow-release stimulus, but that's not as bad as what people feared. In the past, people worried about slow-release stimulus because they said by the time the government money gets there, the economy will be roaring along, we'll get inflation. Well, we don't seem to have that problem.
Let me ask a couple of other questions, Phil, about the larger implications of policy toward these banks. David pointed out that one of the reasons why J.P. Morgan Chase Goldman did so well was because some of their rivals like Lehman and Bear Stearns, others collapsed. We now have the situation of CIT, a company, a finance company, where the government decided not to bail them out as they... are we in a situation where the government is picking winners and losers? And is that a good thing, bad thing? And are we seeing a concentration of power in some of these surviving institutions?
Right. And when the government gets involved in the financial system, inevitably it's going to pick winners and losers. It doesn't look like CIT is entirely going to be a loser, that the government didn't do anything, but the bondholders of CIT have gotten together and offered a deal to restructure the debt. And that looks like a good thing. It's probably a result of the government not stepping in and saying, hey, the system is stable enough now that we don't need to intervene and save it. So can I go back for a second to one thing that Larry just said, which I think is important just to say I really disagree with about tax cuts. Mm-hmm. The first stimulus, and I agree with him there, we're talking about a third one now, $100 billion went out very quickly from April to the beginning of July. About 40% of it was spent very quickly, and we calculate that there's another small second-round effect. There's about $50 billion spent very quickly. I think if the Obama administration could have gotten 50% out the door, 50% of what they got out the door spent very quickly, they would have been very happy. So I disagree with his being negative on the effects of tax cuts.
Quick retort, Larry.
Well, we know what tax cuts can do. The Bush administration did a lot of them, and we ended up with really the worst business cycle in terms of growth of jobs, GDP, wages, income of any in the post-war period. The promises that they made for tax cuts creating jobs were wildly off and substandard for 2003 and 2004. So I really think it's remarkable to hear the conservatives complain that there weren't tax cuts in this recovery package, given they're the tried and failed policies of the past.
We're talking about stimulus as a complete non sequitur to go to the long run, but I'm happy to talk about it. I just think it's a non sequitur.
Well, I don't want to go back and all the history. I do want to look forward here, David, because also this week you had Treasury Secretary Geithner traveling the world. One story I read said, you know, he's now added to his portfolio as bond salesman for American bonds because with this deficit expanding, part of his mission is to convince foreign countries, particularly China, but also in the Middle East, to keep buying American paper. But he also was quoted this week as saying that there are important signs of recovery. What's your best estimate that the Wall Street Journal, has the recession hit bottom yet, or we still have a ways to go?
I think, well, first of all, it's very hard to know. It's like you know where you've been only when you get there, and this has been a very unusual business cycle. There are lots of signs that things aren't any longer getting bad, getting worse. And so the optimistic view is that an economy which was shrinking is about to stop shrinking, maybe in August and September. The problem is that I think people have this image that—
Is that another way of saying hit bottom?
I guess. I've stopped using hit bottom because I can't figure out what it means.
Wait, okay.
But I think that the notion that it's like turning on a switch and then we get growth and everything's happy again is just wrong.
Wrong.
And in some recessions in the past, we've had very deep downturns, and then the Fed has cut interest rates and we've had very steep upturns. There is no reason to believe that's going to be the case this time. So it may well be that the experts declare the recession ended in August and September, but I'd be surprised if we see crowds in Times Square celebrating as if the World War II had ended.
Well, one of the dimensions here is sort of what triggers an upturn. And there was a story this morning saying that a lot of the banks that had received this money are not lending it. Now, that was one of the key elements of the recovery strategy, wasn't it, to increase liquidity? And if the banks are using this to buy other banks and doing something else with it, but not lending, is that adding to the slowness of the recovery?
Right. I mean, you have to remember this goes both ways, that when the economy is weak, the demand for lending, the demand for credit is weak. And so a bank, in a sense, has to have borrowers who have projects to do and want to take risks. And so it's natural that lending will recover slowly. As the economy strengthens, we'll see more lending. You know, I would say a lot of what was done last fall, including the large amounts of money that went to these banks, was to stabilize the system, to make sure that those banks had the financial wherewithal to withstand the losses and really to stay in business. If the financial system had melted down, we would all be worse off. So it's frustrating that it's taking this long, but strengthening the system, and that includes acquisitions, is fundamentally a good thing.
That's partly what Larry Summers, the chief advisor, economic advisor, was saying over the weekend, saying you got to measure where we are from where we might have been and on the brink of a catastrophe. And that, whereas the as David was saying, the recovery is sputtering and it's slow, but you got to measure it against that moment of great crisis.
I agree. It's just hard to remember back in September and October how fragile things were. And so we've done a lot to first stabilize the economy and now get it recovering. So I agree with what Larry Summers said.
Larry, let me ask you about this. And earlier, Phil said that one of the causes of the slow job growth was people were saving instead of spending. How does this work? How do you get this reverse cycle? What comes first? Do people have to be employed so they can spend? Or do you have to get some spending so that people create jobs and hire new? Or is it sort of a combination? I mean, what are we looking for here that will reverse this cycle and start creating jobs?
Right. Well, the thing that has happened is that we had an implosion of demand. Mm-hmm. Consumers who lost a ton of wealth and the stock market and housing, fearful, stop spending, and of the income they've earned, they're starting to save more. So that actually pushes spending down. Another thing that's going to weigh us in the future, I just saw projections by the Goldman Sachs that's saying that they believe wages will actually fall next year. This is not inflation adjusted. This was actually fall. So how are people going to spend if their wages are actually less, even if they don't actually fall? So we are going to see, unfortunately, subdued growth of demand in the future, beset by higher savings, lower wage growth. And that's one reason why it seems obvious to me that the government has to step in and provide some more demand.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Now, one dimension of this, David, is taxes, because we were talking briefly about the situation on the state level, where state governments, enormous shortfalls because tax revenues have been really plunging. They are required by law to balance their budgets, most of them, as opposed to the federal government. And so what many states are facing are tax increases to balance the budget, which comes at exactly the wrong time, as Larry was saying, in terms of trying to restart this energy of spending and job creation. So there are a lot of complex factors that are holding us back.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. And what's going on in the state and local level, we see this drama in California playing out, but you can see it in lots of other states. Spending cuts and tax increases are basically a minus that's offsetting some of the plus that the stimulus was supposed to create from Washington. So that's a huge trick. I think the question is, so where is the growth going to come from? If it's not going to be consumers because they don't have any income and don't have a will to spend, we know the government has expanded quite a bit. There's only about two other places to go. One is business investment. Seems to me very little reason for business to be robustly investing now, given how weak demand is and how uncertain the future.
And a lot of their investment is going into labor-saving productivity innovations, which hold back job growth
to
some extent.
That's another issue. We can talk about that. But then the other possible source is exports, the mm-hmm. rest of the world.
Right.
And unfortunately, most of the rest of the world is at least as bad off as us or worse. It's why there's so much fascination with what's going on in China, partly because they don't have this nagging democracy problem. When they do stimulus, they can really ram it through the system. They're bouncing back pretty quick. But outside of China, there's not much demand outside of the U.S. either, which is why people are kind of worried about the next year or a half.
By the way, I should tell our listeners we're having a little trouble with the phone. So if you have questions and comments for our guests, send us an email. We'll make sure to get the emails on the air while we're trying to fix the phone. So, historically, one of the things that people have bemoaned about the American economy is that people don't save enough. In fact, we had reached a negative savings rate and that we're profligate and we don't save and we're not like the Japanese who, were more responsible. But now we're in this funny position where when people save, it actually is a problem because in terms of short-term economic growth, you want them to go out and spend.
Right. And there is a certain irony. This is St. Augustine, give me all these good things, just not yet. And we want people to save more. And that, in a sense, that's what Americans are looking at the administration's fiscal plans, healthcare, and other things, and saying, whoa, the long term doesn't look so good if the government is dissaving so much. Americans have seen that their economic today is more volatile than they thought. House prices can go down. People lose their jobs. As Larry said, their wages can actually go down even before inflation, and people are saving more. That's probably a good thing. It just makes it tough now.
Good thing in the long run in terms of capital being there for investment. But in the short run, you want people going out and buying that new washing machine.
That's right. That's exactly right. In the long run, we want people to have higher wages and higher incomes. And one thing the administration has done recently that I like is the focus on community colleges and education, because that sort of program, I think, will over time give us higher wages and a more skilled labor force.
Larry, there's been this debate all along. You talked a lot about what Obama inherited in terms of even a more damaging and disastrous situation. But at some point, this becomes the Obama economy. And this week, he seemed to be saying, finally, if you think it's my economy, bring it on. I'll take responsibility for it. Are we now, 6 months into this administration, no matter what he inherited, is this the Obama economy now?
Well, I think the administration made its own mistakes in sort of getting that feeling by claiming there were green shoots and taking credit for things that were happening positively. You can't take credit for a few small good things without taking credit for the whole economy. So I think politically they are going to be held more accountable. And I think what David said about the midterm elections, Democrats should be very frightened of the prospects ahead. Again, Goldman Sachs actually projects that unemployment is going to rise throughout next year and hit 10.5% at the end of next year.
We're going to come back with your calls and your comments, and so stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary, on the web at healthreform.org. By the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Satchel Paige may have been the greatest pitcher in baseball history. The Negro League star possessed a blazing fastball and helped pave the way for the integration of baseball. The life and legend of Satchel Paige, The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and our subject this hour, the economy, the profits made by a lot of banks on Wall Street last week, as well as the larger picture and the economic outlook. And discussing this with me, Larry Michel from the Economic Policy Institute, David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal, Phil Swagel, who was an assistant Treasury Secretary in the Bush administration, now teaches economics at Georgetown Business School. And you can join us. I think our phones are working, sort of. So give us a call at 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. I'll read a couple of emails here. Kevin writes to us, I'd like to challenge your guest's assertion that taxpayers will realize a profit from repayment of the bailout money. Exactly how much has gone out, and exactly how much do we know will come back? Phil.
Okay. It's an important question. that you have to remember these were loans, and some loans are not going to be repaid. So if CIT, for example, ultimately does not make it, then there's several billion dollars of taxpayer money that went to CIT that we might not get all that back. So I absolutely agree. There's going to be some that come in, some that don't. The money we gave to the auto companies, a lot of that is probably just, you know, is just gone.
Mm-hmm. And we have James in Raleigh, North Carolina. Could your guest please comment on how the increase in minimum wage at the end of this week is going to affect businesses and those of us who are currently underemployed? I currently make $7 an hour, so for me, the increase is only 25 cents an hour. Will we really take that much more home with each paycheck if our hours have been cut and more is withheld in federal state income taxes? You were talking about this, Lynn.
Yeah, well, the minimum wage is going to go up, and it's not going to have a large effect nationally, mostly because half the states already have a minimum wage that high. But for those who get it, it will be a great benefit. And they actually, a recent study by the Chicago Federal Reserve Board shows that they will increase their spending a lot. It's actually a stimulus. I actually think that we should continue to raise the minimum wage over the next few years, and it'll be another source of stimulus for the economy, especially in low-wage communities.
And we have Pierre writes to us from Sparta, New Jersey, David. Much of the disaster was caused by allowing banks and mortgage brokers to sell their loans, i.e. take no risk whatsoever. They absolutely don't care a bit if the loan can be repaid. They make money anyway. Why do we allow this? An effective reform would be to simply rule that, quote, if you make a loan, you hold it. What's wrong with this old-fashioned way of doing business?
Well, the diagnosis is correct. One of the problems that we now see is that when these loans were turned into securities, the people who made the loans didn't get hurt if the borrower didn't pay them back, so they had little reason to be cautious when they were lending. There are a lot of benefits to securitization. It made credit more widely available. It allowed people who didn't want to be in the business of having a storefront making loans to indirectly make loans, and so it and it was supposedly spread risk, although it turned out it didn't spread it very much. I think the answer that the Obama administration has, and frankly it's one that makes sense to me, is not to kill securitization in general, but to regulate it differently so that everybody has to have at least some of the skin in the game. So if the loan doesn't get repaid, you have to take some hit. So save the good parts, but throw out the bad parts.
And what is the status of, there's a lot of talk about new regulations as a result of what happened in Wall Street. Bring us up to date on where that stands.
Well, I'm almost certain we'll get new regulations. The question is how quickly we'll get them. The president had made a proposal to Congress. Of course, the president's made a lot of proposals to Congress, and it's not clear how quickly they can manage this through. I think that there was a lot of receptivity to some parts of the president's financial regulatory thing. There was a lot of skepticism about other parts. Some people don't want to give the Federal Reserve any more power than they have already. And it's anybody's guess how quickly they'll move, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen in the next 3 days.
Let's turn to some of our callers. I hope the system works. Paul in Juneau Beach, Florida, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for letting me get on. I have more of a comment than a question. And the comment that I wanted to make is you're talking about the big picture. And today I look at the big picture, whether you're talking about the economy or health care reform or any of the other problems we face. The political decisions are being made within a system that I believe has been just totally corrupted by the special interests. Whether you're talking about the bankers or the health care companies. In fact, I had a lot of hope for the Obama administration based on the way that his campaign was financed through grassroots. But also, if you look at the dollar amounts that his campaign, it's just it makes me wonder if there's any hope. In fact, without insulting your guest, I unfortunately feel that they're probably part of the same group.
Okay, Paul, thanks for your call. Phil.
Right. I mean, some people told me that if I voted for John McCain, or when I voted for John McCain, that we get 4 more years of President Bush's economic policies. And the caller is saying that, yeah, that was right.
But yeah. I think there's a part I agree with and a part I disagree with. The part I agree with is there are a lot of special interests, and they're very hard at work. With the president's financial regulatory reform, nobody really understands it except the people who are in that business, and they're all trying to weaken their little part of it. But I think it's a little harsh to say there's no hope. You know, we muddle along, we make some bad decisions, but every once in a while the stars align and Congress does something that's not perfect and makes the country slightly better off. And I'm not ready to say that that's never going to happen just because there are a lot of evil lobbyists trying to stop it.
Let's turn to James in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. James, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Yes, thank you. I was a banker for about 33 years and retired, but I can tell you there's a lot of manipulation in these earnings. We spent a lot of our time trying to keep the stock price up. When the stock price would drop, say, from 52 to 2, there's nothing left to lose, so you write everything off completely, and then you start bringing it back on as earnings. So I don't trust these earnings figures that we're seeing. I'll leave it at that, I guess.
Okay, thank you. Interesting perspective. Larry, what do you think?
Well, I think that's what David said a little bit earlier for some of the companies, that they really are underwater. There's some short-term things that are making them look good.
And as the caller says, is that part of the reason to boost their stock price?
Well, I think they want to show a profit and maybe support their stock price. But I want to get back to this issue of the special interests. Listen, I'd be a severe critic of corporate America and their stance in driving economic policy. But I think we should give props to the Obama administration for many different things where they are dividing the opposition on health care, where they did this major recovery package that, was a really bold plan. They're going ahead and doing lots of different things, climate change, all sorts of different policies that I think are kind of bold, maybe not as bold as we would want in the particulars. But in no way is this Bush administration, term three. that's quite an insult. You can't get more of an insult.
it was meant to be tongue in cheek.
David, do we have? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. We have an email, David, specifically directed at you from Steve in Texas. The largest stimulus has been the Fed. Will and should Obama reappoint Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed?
Well, I'm not going to get into the should. That's the president's decision, and I don't think he's – last I checked, he wasn't soliciting advice from newspaper reporters. My guess is he will. My guess is he will if the economy gets better and he doesn't need a sacrificial lamb, and if he decides he'd rather not rock the boat by changing horses, to mix the metaphor horribly, at the Fed. All these decisions about reappointing Fed chairman depend on compared to whom. And I think that the president, obviously Larry Summers in the White House is a strong contender, will have to decide, is continuity reappointing a Republican better for the economy and better for his popularity and his bipartisan shtick, or is it better to put a new helmsman there and so he can say, okay, I've gotten rid of the last vestige of the Bush?
But is there any sense of significant policy gap between Obama and Bernanke?
I don't think so. I mean, I look at what Chairman Bernanke has done, and it's just as much as we could have asked him to stabilize the economy when it was weak and to be very creative in using the powers of the Fed to help boost the demand and arrest the free fall. You know, we've had a 30-year tradition now of a bipartisan Fed, of Fed chairman being reappointed from Democrat to Republican, Republican to Democrat. And President Obama not reappointing Chairman Bernanke would break a 30-year tradition of bipartisanship. He's done a great job. I think it'd be hard to explain why to break that tradition.
Okay, let's go to Lou in Williamsburg, Virginia. You're on the Diane Rehm Show. Welcome, Lou.
Yes, good morning. I apologize if someone's already asked this question, but earlier one of your guests stated that J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs are now way too big to fail. I'm curious to know if there are any antitrust regulations which would require these extremely large financial institutions to be broken up. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Anybody got a thought about that?
Well, there's no – I don't think there's an antitrust investigation or anything. They're not that big as a share of the financial system. But Larry's right that they are even bigger than they were when they were too big to fail. And so the administration's approach is to try and change the rules. So if you're that big, you have to be more regulated and you have to have more capital and you have to have bigger cushions so that if you get in trouble, just maybe we can let you fail.
And is there an emerging line? I mean, CIT was sort of on the other side of the line where they wouldn't be bailed out. Do we now have a sense of where that line is of too big to fail?
Well, we're getting closer to that. Of course, the administration's proposal is to set up a way for them to close institutions other than banks so they don't have to have a choice of either letting them go to bankruptcy or having a government bailout, and that's part of their plan. I think CIT stands for if the government thinks that if you go down, some people will get hurt, but you won't bring down the system, they're going to be reluctant to do it. And they were looking for an opportunity to draw some line in the sand. Now, of course, they tried this once before with Lehman Brothers, and that didn't work out so well, so I imagine they draw these lines with an enormous amount of caution.
But, Phil, part of what the Obama administration has tried to argue, and Summers and others, is that in the end, it was the health of the system, not the health of individual banks, that was really the issue. As David was just saying, that it's easy to say, well, let them fail. They made their own mess. But everybody has a stake in the success of the system. And that's what they were trying to argue.
Right. And that really explains what happened last fall, where no one wanted to bail out the banks from us to, to you know, the other side. But we felt we had to, that if the financial system collapsed, it would hurt all of us. I look at what happened with the CIT, and to me, a very encouraging sign is that the creditors got together and worked it out. And that's what we want. We want people who are owed money by these companies to say, well, let's figure out a deal that we don't need the government to come in and bail us out. We don't need a judge to come and sort it. They do it on their own.
Some of that happened with the auto companies, too.
Some of it, as part of it, we as taxpayers wrote a nice big check to the union's health care policy as well. I don't think we're going to be seeing that come back to the Treasury.
Let's turn to Jose in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show, Jose.
Good morning. My question runs something like this. I was one of those lucky people in November of 2007, pulled all my money and parked it in interest-bearing, earning very small amounts, but at least earning. And I'm now retired, and I'm wondering if it's not time to be going back in. I've already had one financial advisor tell me I need to go to put a good portion of my funds into bonds. And I'm curious what you guys think about bonds for the future.
I'm Steve Roberts. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Anybody want to give some financial advice to Jose?
You have to make your own decisions. I look at the markets, and market participants seem to be willing to take more risks. I look at the interest rates facing firms, and they've gone down substantially from where we were in the fall, and especially for the higher quality companies. So low quality companies, the ones that are still in trouble, are paying still a very elevated interest rate, whereas the better ones, the sort of blue chips, their interest rates have come down almost to where we were before the events of last September. So the market seems to be saying that the economy is stabilized and that market participants are willing and ready to start taking more risks.
Let's turn to Ronald in Oak Ridge, Oregon. Is it Ronald? Ronald, got to turn your radio down. Ronald? Okay, let's turn to Larry in Tallahassee, Florida. Larry, welcome to the Diane Rehm Show.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm afraid that the initial problem hasn't been addressed, and that most of the stimulus money is going back into the pockets of the people that caused this problem in the first place. The development real estate industry inflated the price of homes artificially, so that when a person went, 24 years old, a couple of kids went to buy a home, he was being financed on a $150,000 home. It was only actually worth $150,000, and this was known well before all this started. And so he had no choice but accept one of those flaky loans that the banks were offering, hand in hand with the real estate cartel. Now, when the stimulus package comes along, those monies and where they're spent are basically being determined by the little local politicians who have been on the payroll of these guys. Basically, we've got prostitution in the commissions across the country. And so when the federal government asked where that stimulus money was to be spent, they decided to spend it on building infrastructure, basically subsidizing the bigger developers.
Okay, Larry, thanks very much for your call. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I might agree that we still have a problem in housing, but I don't understand the connection to a problem with the recovery package and the stimulus. The money being given to state governments is one of the biggest things propping up the economy at this point. It's responsible for several points of GDP growth in this last quarter and the current quarter we're in. And that's because when the states have to raise taxes and cut spending, they're actually exacerbating the recession, and the relief they're getting offsets that. It's not about saving jobs and state employees. It's about them not cutting back on vendors and not you know, exacerbating a recession, that's actually been a very positive thing.
Let me give, in the minute and a half we have left, let me give each of you a chance to sum up here. Without predicting the, you know, giving advice to people investing in the market, where is this economy going? What do you think, Phil?
Right. I think we're stabilizing, but we have a very weak period ahead. Businesses and consumers are going to be cautious, and the job market is going to remain weak for some time ahead. It's unfortunate, but I think that is the reality we're facing.
What do you think?
I agree with that. I think we're going to go sideways, and my concern is that that makes us vulnerable to going under. It's very hard to imagine a period of time where we're going to have another year and a half with 10% unemployment or more. That just seems like unimaginable, but that's the best forecast we have.
I would agree that we're going to have very high unemployment, and that's even though people are saying that the recovery package will have a substantial effect in the next 18 months. That's why I don't understand people who want to say we have to wait and see what the effect is. We know even if the effect is as good as we hope it will be, we will still have great damage. And in fact, 10% unemployment means 18% among African Americans. Communities that are living in a deep, deep depression and will be for several years to come. And I think that's why we have to do something to support those people and generate more jobs.
Isn't there tremendous fear about the deficit, though, if you do that?
Well, the fact is that raising the deficit another $500 billion is not going to do much to hurt the economy in the long run. It will do a lot to generate income and jobs now.
Larry Michel from the Economic Policy Institute, David Wessel, The Wall Street Journal, Phil Swagel from Georgetown University. Delighted to have you with us this morning on the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Thanks so much for spending your morning with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts.